Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Parenting Impossible, the special needs podcast, special needs survival podcast. Can't leave out that survival part because that is going to be really important to our conversation today. I am so excited to introduce you to my two guests today, two women who I just love dearly, who are amazing, super women. And we're going to be talking today with Hillary Dunn Stanis, who is a sibling and who also does a lot of really cool things in her life. So she's part of the Sibling Support Network, and the Disability Law Center is her professional career. And I also have Alex Nadroni here. And Alex is a financial services professional, also a sibling. And they're both grown somewhat, young women, but still grown. And I had always thought, as my kids were growing up, about how difficult things were for Caroline, my typically developing sibling child, which I just, where do we come up with these terms? I don't know. It's so crazy, like the labels. And does it describe anything about Caroline's experience? No, it does not. But we struggle for language and terminology to try to describe people's experience in life. But we are going to talk in a two-part series about sibling issues, and we are hopefully going to give some really good advice to those of you out there who are in this situation. But also, I really want you to be thinking about the parents that you're talking to as well, because we don't always know what it's like. We try to guess, but we don't always know. And in my experience, you know, my kid doesn't always tell me how hard life can be for her, or just, you know, what's on her mind generally. I know she's talking to her friends about it. So so welcome, ladies. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So really, I want to just start by talking about your life story, you know, what it's been like growing up as a sibling, and, you know, kind of what your family life looked like growing up. So why don't we start with Hillary? What was life like for you?
I'm one of three kids. I'm the youngest, and I have an older sister, and then Chris, my brother, is in the middle. And Chris has pretty significant disabilities, but since I'm the youngest, we're actually all pretty close in age. You know, I don't really know what life is like without, you know, having a sibling with disabilities, so that's just kind of what's normal to me. But Chris he's 41, he has Angelman syndrome, and if anybody knows anything about that, he's pretty typical Angelman's. He's has pretty significant physical disabilities, a severe intellectual disability, he's nonverbal, significant communication challenges, some medical things going on, but, you know, that's all the challenging stuff. He is a happy guy that has a lot of cool interests, just takes, you know, a little while to get to know him and figure out what some of those interests are, but he's a pretty good guy. So, you know, growing up for me, it was challenging at times, but overall, I had an awesome childhood. I mean, I can't look back and say that it was a horrible experience or that I wish my brother was different than he is. I mean, I am happy the way that my childhood turned out. I'm happy to talk about any details that are helpful.
I don't know. We're definitely going to get into the details for
sure.
What about your story, Alex?
So I'm also one of three. I'm actually the oldest, though, and we're 2 years apart. So I have two younger brothers. One, Ben, he's 2 years younger than me, and then my youngest brother, James, who's 28, he has Down syndrome, and he is nonverbal. He also needs a lot of support, so someone kind of needs to be with him from a safety perspective 24/7. He is an extremely, extremely lovable guy, so when we were a lot younger, my little brother actually developed a seizure disorder when he was about 2 years old. So he was hospitalized for well over, you know, around a year or so, in and out of the hospital. So that was kind of the very beginning, like what I remember growing up when I was really young, is really not being with my parents. And I remember kind of having a whole other separate family that luckily today we're extremely close. Actually, my friend, we've been friends like since preschool. So I remember being in kindergarten and preschool at the same time just because my parents weren't there to really, you know, watch us because obviously James was pretty involved in the hospital. And I think, you know, my overall experience has been amazing. James is just the most lovable guy you could ever meet. He has a few words that are really strong, powerful words, and he's the best hugger in the entire world. So you always know how he's feeling and is never shy to tell you, you know, how much he loves you. So it's been mostly positive. And again, I also don't know what it's like to kind of live without a brother that has special needs. And I'm happy to share anything and everything.
So you mentioned, you know, kind of having a surrogate family, and that's a really cool experience. I remember, you know, having to leave Caroline a lot as Elizabeth was in and out of the hospital. How do you think life was different for your friends? You know, what are the comparisons that you made when you were younger, as of course opposed to looking at it now with the mature lens, but when you were a kid and you were in the thick of it, what did that feel like to you? Did their life look just so much better than yours, rosy? You know, what were you thinking about?
I can start, I guess. So I would say I didn't, you know, Chris was, when he was younger, he had some surgeries and some more of, he still has some medical things going on, but there was definitely more, hopefully, not more now, hospital involvement when he was younger. So kind of like Alex, some of my memories when I was quite young that I think I knew at a certain level, even when I was very young, were different than what some other friends were dealing with. You know, we spent a lot of time at Children's Hospital. I, you know, got piggyback rides from, like, orthopedic specialists and neurologists. You know, I mean, that's kind of how I spent a lot of my time. That is also kind of, I think, how I knew that something was a little bit different with Chris. I mean, a hospital is a pretty good indicator, even to a really young kid, that this is a little bit different. You know, that was hard, but I think another challenge was my dad, at that time, he traveled a lot for work, so my mom had a lot on her plate from a caretaking standpoint, and while I didn't have kind of like a surrogate family, I guess, kind of in the way that Alex was talking about it, we were able, you know, state-funded services were a little better funded, relatively speaking, back then, so, We were able to have a fair amount of, like, respite caregivers, and because of what was going on with Chris, a number were nurses. So my sister and I used to joke that we had, like, the most qualified babysitters ever because they were all nurses. And from a small town, you know, they were from our town, and they basically babysat us along with Chris. So that, you know, those things, you do kind of notice that, like, your friends don't really have nurses around their house as their babysitters, and things like that. I think we did kind of notice we're a little bit different. Chris doesn't really sleep very much, so certainly when I would have sleepovers or things like that at other friends' houses, it was like, oh wow, I can actually sleep through the whole night here. Some of those kinds of things. So anyway.
That's such a good point that I wanted to raise. So in thinking about friends, Alex, did you tend to go to other people's houses, or did you have people come to your house, or both? And if you had people come over, what was their reaction like?
So I usually had friends actually come over. We kind of had, my parents were pretty open, and we had a pretty open house, and so my friends would come over, and kind of till this day, some of my friends kind of tease me, like, oh, remember when James used to jump on me and pee on me? And I was like, oh, I guess. I think as a sibling, some of those moments, you almost, like, block them out.
Yeah. You want to say, no,
like, I totally forgot that. What are you talking about?
Thank you so much for reminding me. I really appreciate it.
So obviously that was a little bit different, and something that I do not remember word at all to this day, but she clearly does. So, you know, I think that it definitely was different, but I always kind of would tell people. And from a very young age, I remember actually in kindergarten going into the classroom with a book and explaining to everybody what Down syndrome is. So then at least the kids in the classroom understood a bit more. And I think today it's a lot more open and communicated. You know, it's social, different movies and things, you see people with disabilities, it's not as uncommon, I would, not that it was ever uncommon, but just more spoken about.
It's seen more, yeah, for sure.
So, but definitely from a friend's perspective, I think it was more from a boyfriend perspective. I kind of used that as, the James was always my boyfriend tester, you know, like, let's see how they react with James. And, but yeah, I think that we always just kind of talked about it. We never hid anything, you know, so it was really open and... My
Even
friends.
For birthday parties and things like that.
Yeah, birthday parties. You know, I think that's, for me and my brother, that's kind of how we tested who our friends would be. You know, there's definitely been times where people teased us because of our brother. I remember pretty clearly, you know, having to getting into a couple fights with friends because they didn't accept him, or they kind of were mean to me about my brother and teased me about him. And
right.
I did not accept that. So I think it makes you have a bit thicker skin, just, okay, like you don't. No, you know my brother like I know my brother, and that's your problem, that's your loss, not mine. One thing that would get me upset is when I would talk about my brother and people would say that they were sorry. That's one thing that kind of really aggravates me, is just because I feel, though, you know, having James as my brother, it's been a wonderful experience overall. You know, there's been definitely moments of embarrassment and moments of, you know, just being nervous or not really sure what the future holds, but at the same time, it's always been overall positive. So I think that, you know, people that didn't have this experience are kind of missing something too. So
did you ever worry about what the future holds? Do you remember what your earliest age was of thinking about, oh, someday I'm gonna have to do this?
So I don't remember specifically how old I was, but you know, it's pretty young, and I think parents are kind of kidding themselves if they don't think that their kids without disabilities are thinking about this pretty young. You know, was I five? Probably not five, but you know, I think definitely by middle school, if not before that, it was, you know, I mean, Chris has very severe disabilities, so just from like a developmental standpoint, you know, I don't like talking about it like this, but, you know, I was beyond him developmentally at a very young age.
Right.
So there were certain things that were pretty obvious. He requires care for, you know, self eating, toileting, you know, all of those types of
sure.
ADLs. So sure, it becomes like, oh, gee, who's going to do this? You know, when I see my grandparents getting older, so that means mom and dad are going to get older. And, you know, it's, where's he going to live? Is he going to, I'm going to have Chris live with me? Or my sister saying, I'm going to have Chris live with me. I mean, that, yeah, I mean, those were things that we kind of certainly thought about at age 10, 11, 12, 13, something around there. And that's obviously a very different thing than what a lot of our friends were thinking about at that age. So, yeah. And it's, you know, I always, whenever kind of talk about these things in the sibling experience, I do think it's important to be kind of like real that there's, I love Chris, I don't wish my life was different in any way, but having those thoughts at like 10, 11, 12, 13 is scary and not necessarily fun. So,
yeah,
you know, that's not good.
Yeah.
It's inevitable, but that's kind of the not so great side of some of this. Yeah.
What about you, Alex?
So I don't remember either, like, an age that I started to think about and what my role would be in my brother's life. But having two brothers, I always was kind of more of the motherly role. Like, I kind of am the one still to this day that kind of helps to, you know, when we have family events or do different things, to make sure that, you know, everyone's kind of together. And so I kind of always put myself in that role with James and, you know, kind of put that responsibility, I would say, maybe a little bit too much sometimes over my shoulders. And same thing with my brother Ben. I think that we always just had this more parental role than any of our friends ever in a million years would think of. And, you know, the first time that we had a conversation about it, you know, both my parents are very involved in the disability community. My mom, you know, has been an advocate forever and ever, and, you know, helping other families. And I always heard on the phone talking to other families about planning. And my dad, you know, does special needs financial planning. So I heard him talking about planning for the future. And, you know, we never really had conversations. It was like, oh, when everything's all set, don't worry about it, don't worry about it. But, you know, this is something that was always in the back of our minds. And, you know, talking to my brother, we always thought, well, no, he's going to live with me one day, he's going to live with, you know, one of us one day, but we didn't really understand everything that went with it either. You know, we saw what our parents did every single day, but just knew that we wanted to be involved. But, you know, I think it's important to have open communication and be able to talk about those things. And it definitely is a different feeling to have, but again, I didn't know that other families didn't really think about that, you know, but I, in the back of my mind, I knew that, but it's just such a part of your life being a sibling. It's your whole life, so.
Yeah. Well, I remember, and I write about this in my book, I remember the earliest age that I realized that Caroline was thinking about this. She was 6. And so Elizabeth was very challenged as well, and she required complete physical care. And so Sundays were always hard. We never had a nurse, so we would have to get ready for the day, and it would be a long time, and there's meds, and there's suctioning, and there's, you know, diaper changes, and I know we're not supposed to call them diapers, but I'm a mom. It's still diapers to me, so incontinence briefs, or whatever you want to call them, you know, and so I'm getting her dressed and washing her up, and it's, you know, it's an hour and a half of all of the things that have to get done. And she just, like, was with me, as always, being a single parent. And so at one point, she looks up at me, and she's got this really serious look on her face and says, Mom, when am I going to have to start changing Elizabeth's diaper? And it wasn't like she was upset about it. It was just a very serious question of, okay, so someday I'm going to have to do this. And at 6, she was thinking about it. It was really crushing, crushing. And you know, I basically told her not to worry, that I had a plan, everything was going to be okay, and, you know, she would be part of that plan, but we would talk about it when she got older. So I, of course, had no plan and was lying through my teeth, because I hadn't really thought about it, because if I can project, you know, maybe what your parents are going through, as much as they may have seemed like they were really on top of everything, you're so busy doing the day-to-day that a lot of times you don't have, you can't catch your breath, and you don't have time to really kind of think out that far. So I wanted to ask you, if you feel comfortable talking about this, you know, what was your understanding, or what was your appreciation when you were a kid of what your parents were going through?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody. Have you been searching for a law firm that understands the unique challenges of your family? We can help. My name is Annette Hines, and I'm a mom and an attorney. And I'm also an advocate. And I started Special Needs Law Group because when my family was young, I struggled to find all the services and support that my family needed. We can help here at Special Needs Law Group with special needs trusts, guardianships, and maybe you aren't even sure what you need yet. And we can help with that too. Book a free call today. You can either use our link in the show notes, or you can go to www.specialneeds-law.com. See you soon.
I mean, as a really young kid, I'm not sure, you know, I had a great appreciation for, you know, it's just mom's taking care of Chris, you know. But I'm trying to, I think as I got a little bit older, I mean, it being a sibling of somebody with a disability doesn't immunize you from being a bratty teenager. And, you know, I think in some ways our birth orders are, you know, all the stuff around that is a little messed up because Chris is the middle child, but, and I'm the youngest, but is it really like that, you know, developmentally, all that. But in many ways, my sister is an older child and I am a younger child. I was a very typical, like, bratty kid. When I hit middle school, I, you know, was the girl that, like, wanted to be with her friends and was embarrassed by everything of my family and, you know, regrettably embarrassed by some stuff of my brother. But, you know, that's
right.
Natural. It, I'm sure it didn't make everybody feel good in my family, but that's a natural experience.
It really is.
To be a jerk at times when you're a teenager. I think, though, once I kind of hit high school age, I did have an appreciation for how difficult it really was. I mean, my parents, even now, but then I would see, you know, how sleep-deprived they were. You know, my mom, I don't know what choices she would have made for work versus, you know, staying at home to take care of the kids if Chris wasn't in the picture, but she's... I think probably would have wanted to work a little bit, maybe more than she did. And, you know, kind of that stuff became a little obvious as I got a little bit older and a little less self-absorbed. So, you know.
By the way, you don't have to have a brother like Chris to be a bratty teen.
Well, that's embarrassed what I mean. Of your family. You still have those normal experiences. It's just, yeah. Make us angelic, that's for sure.
But you have a lot more guilt about it than you maybe normally would, because you feel like you're supposed to be good all the time, and you shouldn't feel that way. And what about your experience?
So I definitely agree. I was a bratty kid when I was growing up, and I really didn't appreciate all that my parents did for a long time. I didn't really know everything that they were doing, I feel like. And obviously... you know, everything that goes into raising someone between, you know, all the different schools that James changed to. My mom obviously put tons and tons of hours in to try to find the best education for him. And sometimes it was him going, you know, far away, which was emotional, I'm sure, too, for my family. And so I think that I really had no idea. I think there were times where my parents would ask me once in a blue moon to hang out with James on a Friday night, and so they could go out and have some time. And I just remember being really mad about it. Like, why do I have to watch my 18-year-old brother when all my friends are out having fun? You know, it just was something that you do your entire life. And I remember just being really, you know, upset about it. And, you know, sometimes jealous, too, that, you know, he got a lot of the attention a lot of the time, and didn't really see all that they were doing. As I got older, I feel terrible that I didn't help out more when I was younger. Like, I think that I was very involved in my brother's life, you know, his entire life. There wasn't a time that I wasn't, but I definitely didn't see everything that my parents had going on. So now I feel like I have a much bigger role and feel more, you know, want to definitely be more involved than I ever was before.
I think, so my brother went to, Chris had to go to residential school, and I think that was when he left for residential school, or when, I'll never forget, I think I wrote my college essay about it, right? You know, any sibling of somebody with disabilities has, like, a built-in perfect college essay topic,
right.
but it was this specific incident, like, I'll never forget my mom and dad sitting my sister and I down to tell us that, you know, Chris was going to go to residential school. You know, it was only a few towns away from us and everything, but it was, I would have been about 12 or 13 then. And that was, I think, the first moment. And because my parents, you know, they're not super, they don't really show us their emotions a whole heck of a lot. I don't think that's overly, you know, uncommon. And they were really visibly upset talking to us about him going to residential school and not living with us. And I think that was the first moment that I was like, oh my God, like, Chris isn't going to be here. Everything's going to change.
Right.
And everything's going to change. I don't know. I think some kids might have been like, oh great, I'm going to have mom and dad to myself. I don't know. I've seen it as sort of an opportunity. But I think it was a time that I actually became a little bit more mature and was like, mom and dad have been doing, like, everything for Chris, and now he's going to residential school. Like, what is our life going to look like? And, you know, it was almost, like, devastating. So, I don't know.
Yeah, fear of the unknown, but also thinking about, well, who's going to take care of him?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, did, your brother James stayed home, right, Alex?
Mm-hmm. So he stayed home, but he was down at Cardinal Cushing for a while, and he was just at a ton of different schools. So it was always, my mom was always kind of battling with the school system, trying to get him somewhere else. And so it was just a lot of her, like, spending a ton of time. And then with the transportation and, you know, everything that we've all kind of dealt with transportation. And and so it was just hard for them to know that he was sitting in on a bus for an hour and a half every single day to get the best education. Is that the best thing? Should he be on a bus? Should he not be on a bus? Just, you know, everything that goes into trying to get the best opportunity for them. But,
well, you both have a typical sibling. And I wonder, what was your relationship like with your typical when you were growing up? Do you feel like it made you closer? Did you not see eye to eye about things? Did they have a different experience than you did? What was that like for you?
I think, of course, not all the time, but I know the research is pretty clear on, like, there are different experiences, I think, for sisters than brothers in this. So Alex and her brother probably had a little different dynamic maybe than my sister and I in some ways. So I don't think, I mean, I don't know, Meredith could have a totally different take on this, my sister, but in many ways I think we did have a pretty similar experience, you know, with the caveat that she was clearly the oldest child and I was clearly the youngest child.
Birth order, you know, definitely, for Sheena,
was like abundantly obvious. She came out of the womb as like a mature 18-year-old and I was, you know, off doing my thing. But as it came to Chris, I think my parents did not ever, as young when we were kids, put us in the position to be caretakers. They went out of their way not to do that. So in that sense, I think, you know, Meredith and I were able to just be Chris's sisters. I think as we've gotten older, maybe our experiences have changed some. Meredith probably wasn't as bratty of a teenager as I was, but I do think some of that was like the older child taking care of the younger siblings. But, you know, she was able to, just because it worked out, because of the age of some kids of other families we knew, she was able to connect with another sibling of somebody with disabilities at probably some pretty formative times in like 5th, 6th grade. I didn't have that experience, so in that way I would say we did have a little bit of a different experience.
Oh, okay.
You know, kind of some of the stuff that's available for kids now, the different like sibling support groups, sib shops and stuff. You know, I mean, I'm old enough that those things were not really so much around.
Right.
So Meredith had a peer. I didn't really have a peer growing up except for her. But we generally saw eye to eye with Chris and everything as kids. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What about you and your brother?
So, yeah, we definitely have had a different experience and still to this day are very different with our brother. So James actually works with us every Thursday, and so he came in today and he runs to me and he's kind of like my favorite person. I think that I'm his favorite person. And you know, some woman that we work with, she goes, "Oh my gosh, James just adores you, and Ben has to buy his love with Coca-Cola." So it's kind of like a very different relationship where Ben and James always kind of were teasing each other. Like, you know, Ben was always kind of egging him on, like very bro relationship, and where I was always like, "Oh, James, I love you, like come give me a hug." So very like motherly. So James always kind of viewed me as a softy, and Ben is kind of, he's gonna make me work really hard and make him like, Ben has done a wonderful job helping him to be even more independent, where I feel like I'm more of kind of a parent where, "Oh, I can do that for you, James." And so I think it's really helpful, you know, having those different relationships with James, just because it has, I think, helped him to become more independent, like emptying the dishwasher and doing different things like that. But when we were younger, I think that my parents, you know, just saw me as being kind of the oldest child and always raised me to kind of be independent and put that kind of a bit more on me than on Ben, just because I think that's kind of how it is nowadays with women and men, and, you know, and growing up, and especially with a sibling with a disability, they kind of pictured me as being more of that parental role. Not that I was doing any, you know, ongoing caregiving, but definitely helped out more with that type of thing. And where I feel like Ben was a bit more jealous when he was younger, like, well, why are you guys doing this? Like, I remember a couple years ago even saying, I'm giving you guys all the dirt. Right? So he was saying, like, Mom, why are you cutting James's meat and not my meat? And mind you, this is like 5 years ago, so we're clearly adults. It was kind of a joke, but at the same time, like, what are you talking about? So it's just very, you know, and I think that, you know, even a couple years ago, my parents went away for the first time for about a week and a half, and without James. And we were, you know, watching him, and the wrong transportation showed up. So we all started freaking out because nobody knew where James was, because he's nonverbal, doesn't have a cell phone, so we couldn't get a hold of him, we couldn't get a hold of transportation people. And so Ben's response was, oh my gosh, how did you just figure that out? I just would have went inside and cried and put my head under a pillow. Where I'm kind of that, let's figure this out here, let's see what's going on. So we work together, so he is a fabulous, fabulous support person and kind of helping me be the one that's in control, but at the same time really helping me and, you know, emotionally kind of get through all of this stuff. So I think that he's kind of the backbone, but we all kind of have our different...
So do you think that when your parents are not caregivers anymore, that you're going to be able to work together as a team with your typical sibling to do what's best and what's needed?
100%. So I think that, you know, well, I think Ben is the most supportive and easygoing guy in the, like, that I know, that he'll just kind of, we can communicate. I think that because we have a brother with disabilities, we've always had difficult conversations. We've been able to, I can talk to my brother about anything more than I can talk to, you know, some of my best friends about, which is probably rare because it is a male. It's, you know, my brother. But I can talk to him about anything and everything. And I think that that's kind of what it takes to be able to be a successful team, is to be able to have those conversations, to be able to make a decision and know what kind of your skill set is and what the other person's skill set is. So,
So I fortunately know your sister. So I know that Meredith is all over it.
Yeah.
But do you feel like you come at this as equals, or do you each have your thing that you do? How does that work in your family?
So in our family, I think we... we come at it in different ways. So, you know, I mean, to answer the kind of question of, will my sister and I, do I think we'll be able to kind of be a team taking over care for Chris and all of that? Yes. Do we have different styles and different ideas about what some of that might look like? Sure. I think we probably have a similar idea of what it should look like for Chris. But Meredith's background is, you know, she's a special ed teacher, administrator, has all the background in that. So the reality, I mean, I have no pride in, you know, pride issue of saying that, like, she's better with Chris as, like, you know, kind of the hands-on, even some of the personal care stuff. I mean, I think Chris still sees me as this, like, little playmate and is like, you're a joke, get out of here, you know?
Well, that's the most part of it, right?
You know, and it's just Meredith's, because of her career and her job, I mean, she, for years, was in the classroom teaching intensive special needs classrooms, so mini versions of Chris. So, you know, Chris may need to wear adult brief, right, or diaper, or whatever,
right?
Sometimes.
I mean, what do you call these
or
things?
You know, or needs just kind of help with some of those types of things. That I can do that with Chris, but I'm not used to doing it on an everyday basis. Meredith can do that in, like, you know, that's just something she's used to doing. So she is better with him on some of that stuff. But so I think we have in it a pretty clear division of kind of knowledge bases, and I don't think either of us thinks that they know. She doesn't know how to be kind of a lawyer, and I don't know how to be a special ed teacher. So,
yeah.
So for Chris, I think that translates into, you know, two decent skill sets that hopefully we'll be able to work together pretty well. Yeah.
That is really cool. I love it. I love both of your answers to that question. What advice would you give to parents to make sure that they are having a positive experience for their typical kids?
This is Alex. I think that, you know, just knowing that your kids are definitely thinking about this, it is just a part of their life, and that you had kind of this prior life before, you know, having a child with special needs, but your siblings don't know anything at all different. And just recognizing that, and that, you know, I just truly believe that talking about it as much as possible and making it, you know, everyone feel comfortable to be able to, you know, share their experiences. And I think every sibling experience is so very different too. So, you know, sometimes even talking to someone else, or, you know, I did the sip shops with my brother and I loved them and my brother hated them. So, you know, I think it's too, it's, you know, he didn't want to sit around a table and talk about it with Down syndrome. I was like, sure, I love to talk about James, you know? So, and, you know, I just think that that's really important too, is that
just approaching each kid individually and meeting them where they are and not one size fits all, basically, is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Spot on.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's more and more research on us, the siblings, coming out, and you can, some of it's pretty, you know, it seems like common sense, but, and again, every kid's different, but there are some common themes that I would, if parents maybe just have some of the information, maybe they won't feel, I don't know, maybe it'd be empowering in a way. I mean, but the reality is, yes, there's times that, like, we're going to feel really jealous as young kids. I mean, hopefully things improve with maturity, right? But as young kids, yes, we're going to feel jealous. Yes, we're going to feel like we're not getting as much of your time as we would want. You know, it's going to feel unfair to us at some times. We might say things that are hurtful, that are, you know, that you wish your brother was, you know, different or something when you were little because you want your parents' attention. Those are hard. I think I can imagine they're very hard for a parent to hear. It's hard to look back on knowing that, you know, you may have behaved in that way as a kid. But it's natural. Like, we don't have, as a child, you don't have, like, the language or the emotional intelligence to be able to, like, handle what is a fairly intense experience that, like Alex said, a parent, you've lived another life, and, you know, you're coming at it with a different perspective. We don't know anything else. And as, like, a 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old, we don't have the language and maturity to maybe always handle it in the best way.
Wow.
But the positive side to that, right, is, like, that's okay.
Right.
It doesn't, that's not indicative of what the rest of the life is going to be like, you know. That's just the challenge that you're dealing with in that time, and that, you know, we'll come around. Just because we don't like our sibling for whatever reason at that time, because they're taking up too much of mom or dad's attention, you know, when we gain a little perspective, we're going to feel really bad about that, which is our own issue. It's a different thing.
So much guilt.
So much guilt. But, you know, I don't know. I know that's kind of like talking about some of the negatives, but it is, like, information is power, right? Just, like, knowing that it's part of, for many siblings, it's part of the experience and the process. And, you know, there's nothing that a parent can do to, like, take some of that away. Like, you're not doing something wrong because your kid's jealous, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's great. It's learning the whole, like, fair isn't equal, equal isn't fair type thing. That equal time is not possible. But that also doesn't mean that that's what equals fairness, right? I mean, fairness is what you can give to your kids in the best possible way and finding special moments for them that work.
Some siblings' experience is different than yours in that their sibling may have pretty crushing behaviors or maybe pretty tough to be around.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what would your advice be to them if they need to love from a distance?
So, I will say Chris has very severe disabilities in a lot of ways, and he doesn't have behavioral challenges in the way I think that you're thinking about. But, you know, growing up, he pulled our hair all the time, scratches all the time. He ripped my hair one time so hard that it pulled out a piece of my scalp, you know. I mean, they're not... So I can't appreciate the entire experience of siblings with, you know, maybe a brother or sister with kind of ongoing serious behavioral and aggressive challenges. but I had some glimpses of kind of what that's like. And for the parents, I mean, I think particularly possibly for daughters out there, it's balancing, like, you need to love your sibling and you need to be there for your sibling with making sure that they know that that's not, and they don't need to experience violence in all of their relationships.
Right.
And I know that's a harsh way to put it, because the child with a disability isn't purposely being violent, but, you know, like, let's be real about what that situation is, and we want to make sure that the siblings without disabilities are able to develop healthy relationships outside of the family, and know that that shouldn't always be happening.
Yeah.
But the loving from a distancing that you're talking about, that, yeah, I mean, it's a different experience, and I don't have perfect words of wisdom. I don't know if Alex has.
What do you think, Alex?
Yeah, I don't have perfect words, but I do think that it's important, you know, for the child to somewhat protect themselves and make sure that that they are there for their family as much as they can be. And just talking with the parents, you know, I keep talking about just communicating. And I think that, you know, the last thing you want is the parents to kind of expect for the child to take on some responsibility. And then as they get older, then they kind of say last minute, not going to do that. So I just think it's so important for, you know, everyone to talk, especially as some disabilities develop much later in life, where maybe they were used to, you know, mental health concerns, for example, that maybe they were used to having a sibling that didn't react violently or act a certain way. And that's even harder, I think, because then their sibling that they know completely changed. And I think that that can be where you see a lot of severed relationships between siblings. So I think just, you know, talking with other families that are going through the same experience, connecting with siblings that, you know, have a sibling maybe that's doing the same, something similar. So I think that just being able to find a support network that you can share your experience without feeling embarrassed or, you know, guilty about.
Yeah, we're going to explore that in part two. Okay, last question. Tough question. What is your deepest fear in regards to being a sibling of a special needs person?
My deepest fear is that I wouldn't be able to, you know, step in and be anything close to what my mother is, which I know is impossible, but I think that that is, you know, she's just remarkable, and it's a big position to take over one day. I know I'm not going to be able to do everything that she does, but I know it's kind of, you know, a traditional fear that most people have, but I think that's the biggest thing, is just, you know, being able to take over and have James have as great of a life as he has today forever.
That's a tall order.
Yeah, it's a very tall order, but I think that's my, you know, I think that that's the fear, is he's, you know, so close embedded in my whole family, and that, you know, we'll need to replace what she does one day, hopefully not for a really, really, really long time, but that's definitely a fear.
Wow.
I would say two. One is, like, super morbid. I'll get that one over with. one is, I mean, it's a fear that I think parents have, and I would have it. I'm afraid of predeceasing my brother. You know, I mean, I can understand the parents' fear, you know, of their passing on and who's going to take care. And, you know, fortunately for our Alex and I, for our brothers, they have other siblings and we can step in and help. But I'm, yeah, petrified of if my sister and I pass away before Chris. He's a normal life expectancy and all of that, and I hope he's a healthy guy. So that's really morbid and kind of a downer. But also, I would say, kind of in line of the taking over the caregiving and, you know, caregiving from afar, whether it's hands-on or kind of overseeing his care, it's being able to balance being able to maintain any amount of, like, a healthy life balance with taking care of kind of my brother, aging parents, and hopefully my own kids, that is going to be a tall order.
So profound. Oh my gosh. On that scary note. Oh, you two, you're amazing. Thank you so much. We're going to wrap up this episode, and next time we get together, we're going to talk a little bit more about your professional lives and what some of the cool things that you're doing are and how they're helping people in your position, helping families like yours. So thank you both so much.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I just wanted to take a second to say how much I appreciate you taking the time to listen to these podcasts. I'm having a blast doing them, and I hope that you're finding the content to be what you were really hoping. If you are, please take a second to leave a rating and a review. It's so helpful in getting this content out to people who really need to hear it. Thank you so much.